Welcome to Made in Science, the official podcast of the University of Stuttgart. In today's episode, our guest is Professor Ingmar Kalfas, who knows the university inside out, so to speak, and from various perspectives. He was a student of electrical engineering. Then he left the university and Stuttgart only to return as a professor in 2013. Let us find out why he returned and also what is currently happening in his field of research. Why he thinks that electrical engineering has a wrong public image in Germany and what all of us can do to protect the planet. Hello, Professor Kalfas, and thank you for being here today.
Hello, Professor Holtkamp. It's a great pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be in this nice recording studio, and I'm looking forward to this interview session.
Professor Kalfas, in 2013, you were appointed at the University of Stuttgart to the Institute for Robust Power Semiconductor Systems, which was at the time a new foundation with the Robert Bosch Center for Power Electronics. Currently, you are the head of a team of 18 doctoral researchers with whom you lead several joint research development projects at national and international level in the fields of power and microwave electronics. What is the center of your current research?
The current research is focusing on exploring the potential of modern semiconductor technologies in two main directions of research. One is microwave and millimeter wave electronics, so extreme high frequency electronics, and the other area is power electronics. In both areas, we can push the frontier of today's limitations of technology by employing those modern semiconductor technologies and trying to bring them into application.
And what would be an application that you think of in this context?
Yes. So, in the area of extremely high-frequency electronics, we are, for instance, working towards what is referred to as terahertz communication. It's a nice-sounding term, which essentially means that we try to develop and implement radios, or technically speaking, transceivers, which allow us to transmit very high data rates for instance, internet traffic through air, and that at carrier frequencies which are way beyond what is currently being used in wireless communication technology. And on the other end of the spectrum, where we work in power electronics, we address applications like e-mobility and renewable energies, where it's about the transport and the conversion of electrical energy from a generator to a load. And the goal here is to do this with a minimum amount of waste energy, so with maximum possible efficiency and with small outline factors in terms of volume, size and cost of the power electronics.
There is already something visionary in your answer, and I wonder how that may also translate to the competence center that together with your team you form here for the European Center for Power Electronics. What is the competence center about? Does it refer to these areas as well, or would it go beyond?
The competence center is part of this a big association, which is the European Center of Power Electronics, where a lot of big companies, but also many small and medium-sized enterprises come together, and the university partners are designated as competence centers because we are supposed to bring in to explore new technologies, to go ways that industry usually doesn't have you know, the time and the leisure to go. So we explore exactly this potential of new technologies in areas such as power electronics for e-mobility and renewable energies. So, yes, my team of PhD students, essentially, it's them who conduct the research, sometimes together with partners, sometimes we do it on our own. We try to go new ways and save energy. Bottom line is we try to save energy in electronic applications and do this with modern technologies which bring degrees of freedom that are beyond today's technologies.
You are also study dean at the Electrical Engineering and Information Technology Institute of Robust Power Semiconductor Systems. I know that the Faculty of Electrical Engineering has several initiatives reaching out to pupils to study this particular field. When there are information days at our university or on other occasions, how do you motivate pupils and perhaps also students for studying electrical engineering?
Yes, this is an important and tricky challenge that all of us are facing today. Young people are demanded everywhere in all branches of industry, not only in academia, but also in academia with its great diversity of different forms of universities. All of us are eager to motivate young people to be fascinated by our areas of research. So I have this pleasure and honor of serving as a dean of students at the moment in the faculty and in the Department of Electrical Engineering and Information Technology. And while I try to look after our ongoing students who are already on board, I also try to motivate people to see the true picture of electrical engineering, which, as you already mentioned, is often the term often is not correctly associated with the modern scientific aspects which are behind it. So I try to correct this image and I try to reach out to young pupils in schools and motivate them. So how to do it? Well, first of all, by trying to rectify the image and to convey the fact that electrical engineering and information technology is probably the most up-to-date and modern branch of engineering science that you can find, where it's all about electrification, digitization, and connectivity. These, I think, are the three terms which describe in a more modern way what is behind electrical engineering. So it's by rectifying the image, and it's also by being honest about the different forms of educational systems we have here, and by trying to explain both the very big challenges that students face when they start their studies at our university, but also the enormous benefits of a degree course done at our university, which is one of the big research universities where we have this combination of education and research, and the two are mutually beneficial.
Perhaps in another capacity that we have not mentioned yet, you can also use that, and I think you do it already. You are a member of the board of directors at the German Satellite Communication, help me out, organization, that in that capacity, space technology comes in, and a certain center not far from Stuttgart.
Yes, that is correct. So the German Center for Satellite Communication is not far from here. It's in the I think what they like to refer to as the Space Valley, close to Backnang, where one of the major companies active in space research is located. And space is one of those areas where there is a lot of potential still waiting to exploit. And we see that already happening, especially in the area of internet services, where we already see the start, but it's only the beginning of big satellite constellations spanning the entire globe, connecting everybody anywhere on the planet, anytime with broadband internet connectivity. We are not fully there yet, but this is going to happen. It is also going to happen in the context of the sixth generation of mobile communication systems. We are working at 5G today, but 6G is on the horizon, and so-called vertical communication will start to enter the picture, where we will communicate with space. Space is also an area where new technologies are able to bring a lot of benefit. Space technology is often the precursor to what is later on deployed in terrestrial applications. Energy is a scarce entity in space. We now know that we must focus more on energy savings also on the surface of our planet. So we always try to save energy in space applications, and this has a lot of potential to also be applied and transferred to terrestrial applications. In space, we take, for instance, a satellite, and we have just recently launched a research satellite into space and are eager to receive its signals on the ground station, which is already prepared here at the Stuttgart University. If you take such a satellite, it's like a little autonomous system which is underway all on its own in space. It needs some form of energy generation, usually by solar panels. It needs energy storage in the form of a battery. It has its own energy distribution system, and there it has to provide the energy for many subsystems which are built into such a satellite. There is communication with the satellite to other satellites or to ground. There is an experiment installed on board of the satellite, and it's like an autonomous system. It has to be intelligent, it has to be able to sense its surroundings, has to be able to maneuver and to position itself in space. And a lot of the modern research activities which are ongoing in electrical engineering and information technology, you can map them to the technology that is required for satellites. So it's a very fascinating area, and we are active in that area for the application of wideband data links, communication systems, which allow us to increase eventually the connectivity with fast internet from space to ground.
Now, in space, many nations work together. It cannot be done by one alone, and it is a global affair to start with. How does that relate to your institute? How did you increase the international profile at the institute, which I understand you came to 10 years ago?
Yes, so by the way, yes, we have an anniversary. The institute was created in early 2013, so we are still 10 years old. It will soon turn 11. It is certainly one of the youngest institutes at the university. It is the youngest institute in the faculty computer science, electrical engineering, and information technology. And we are now 10 years old. And as you said in the introductory statement, I'm now proud to lead a team of 18, soon to be 20, PhD researchers. And so we have grown to that size over the past 10 years, and we have grown to be a very highly connected team of researchers. We are connected to other academic groups, but also industry on the national level in the frame of nationally funded R&D projects. But we also have a strong European profile with several European R&D projects which are currently underway, both in the area of high-frequency electronics but also in power electronics. Several partners also on the European level. And I would love to extend, to reach out beyond Europe. And we have done that in the past in a strong collaboration with Japan, for instance. Also, we have an ongoing collaboration with Israel. On the other hand, in R&D, it's not so easy to reach out to other continents. There are not many funding schemes which allow us to work together. So here, the collaboration is essentially limited to the exchange with scientists from other continents in the frame of conferences and so on. And I strongly encourage all of my team members to engage in conferences and in this exchange with other scientists.
When you came to the University of Stuttgart, you brought several experiences from your work at national and international academic institutions with you. I would like to ask you, what influenced you at these various destinations in your career? Let's start at the University of Ulm, where you worked in the field of transistor modeling and circuit design. In 2002, you joined the Department of Electron Devices and Circuits at the University of Ulm as a teaching and research assistant. What were your responsibilities at the time?
Yes, so I had the pleasure of reaching out beyond my alma mater, which was the University of Stuttgart, after my engineering diploma, and I reached out and went to do to obtain my PhD degree from Ulm University, which I'll grant is not too far away from Stuttgart. I spent the first year of my PhD research in Ireland, which was another European cooperative project at the time between Ulm and Dublin, and I had this pleasure of experiencing a year of research abroad. Well, at the time, I was a PhD student, as you would call this, on an international level. Here in Germany, I was more closely described as a research assistant to a professor. So I carried out research towards my own PhD, but I also helped in organizing the teaching activities at Ulm University. And in this frame, also in the first year in Ireland, and then also as a postdoc after my PhD degree, where I joined the Fraunhofer Society, I basically built my own individual, let's say, research profile, things that I know how to do, and it started with the modeling of modern semiconductor devices, and it went into the area of circuit design using such modern semiconductor technologies. And so it grows, right? Over the years, you build your own profile, and then eventually I became a professor first at the KIT at the time for 3 years, and then finally, and up to now, I joined the University of Stuttgart, and then you start to grow a team of researchers. And by now, I am able to convey some of my experience, which I gathered at the time Ulm, in Dublin, and later on at Fraunhofer Society. today I'm in a position where I try to convey some of my knowledge to the young researchers in my team, but it is mostly also them who allow me to still widen my field of expertise from the research they are carrying out and the findings they make. And I, in a way, profit a lot from this research of my team, which complements my own personal scientific background.
Let's go back for a moment again to the Fraunhofer Institute for Applied Solid State Physics, the IAF in Freiburg. That must have been a very different perspective from, say, your position at the University of Ulm. How did the two go together at the time? How do you think about them now?
Well, now I look back at this. Now I'm in the position of a university professor. And I look back at my time at the Fraunhofer Society as a very privileged time where I was able to gain a lot of expertise, having access to state-of-the-art technology and to measurement equipment, and also to the experience and the knowledge of very experienced scientists, which you find at the Fraunhofer Society and only there in such what we call large research institutions that we have in Germany. And the Fraunhofer Society is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, of these large research institutions. It's very privileged way of carrying out research because you have essentially unlimited infrastructure. In a way, very different from the research being carried out at universities, where we have to live with more modest infrastructure. And, now I look at this from a perspective of a university professor. And sometimes richness is not the best way to obtain and to explore new areas in science. Sometimes it's because you have to find solutions with scarce resources. And it's under these conditions that you sometimes have the best ideas and you find the best solutions. So in a way, I'm very grateful for the privileged experience that I had in a large research institution where I did my postdoc. And it helps me now as a university professor. We still have strong collaborations and joint projects, which is also very beneficial. But I'm now also grateful to have this freedom of thinking and freedom to explore scientific areas without the constraints of an institution like the Fraunhofer Society.
Different perspectives, that's what you just said. That is something that you also gained during your stay at the National University of Ireland in Dublin. That must be another aspect that also influenced your work. Do you see these days something that you also have brought back here to the University of Stuttgart?
I guess, yes. You probably should ask my students what they think, but I believe so, yes, that my experience abroad, not only in Ireland, but I also spent time in France, in the UK. To be honest, I never went beyond Europe, but we find so much diversity in Europe, and it's such an enriching experience. And I think the way I, you know, interact with my students today is probably has been formed also to some extent from this experience abroad. One example is that I tend to very quickly apply the British way of using first names for everybody, you know. This is sometimes strange in a German academic environment. So, but I was I was impressed at how everybody is speaking on the same level, from an undergrad student to a postgrad to PhD to postdocs to professors. Everybody is exchanging on a similar level from their individual perspectives, from their individual knowledge base at their time in life, and this was such an enriching experience for me that I try to apply it also today in my team that I can somehow oversee.
Well, Ingmar, if I may, let's look ahead a little bit into the future here. You refer to your 10th anniversary at the Institute. What will be upcoming in the next 10 years? And perhaps we can even be a little more specific. What do you think will not happen? What do you see will happen? And what do you wish to happen in your research?
You probably refer to technological developments that I foresee or don't foresee. So before I talk about that, maybe I should add that a lot of what I wish to happen in the next 10 years is on the level of, as we mentioned earlier on motivating young people to become active in this area of engineering sciences, because it is so very important to our society today. So that aside, looking at technological developments, what is going to happen is I think we are going to explore space much more and much more extensively as we do today. We are going to, and we will be part of that. I hope to be part of that with my team. We are going to explore frequencies that are not yet addressed in applications, and I hope to be part of that, and we are working towards it with my team. What I think is going to happen on the perspective of the next 10 years is that machine learning and artificial intelligence is going to change dramatically. Also, our area of research, an example is that we are using artificial intelligence methods to improve efficiencies of power electronic applications, to make your car battery last longer, to increase the lifetime of components in our applications. We are already now exploring the potential of artificial intelligence, and I think this is going to increase dramatically over the next years. We see it in all areas of society, this introduction of artificial intelligence, machine learning concepts. And I think it's going to be the big challenge, both on the technological side, but also on society. So what I don't see to happen, it's a more tricky question. I'm a bit conservative concerning the rich promises of quantum technologies. I know it's in everybody's mouth today. It is a fascinating area. But I also think that as an engineer, I tend to look at the implementation side of things. I tend to look at how much time and effort and money and energy is needed to bring a new technology into applications. And I think in this area of quantum technologies, we are only just at the beginning of this development, but it will take longer than what many people predict. And finally, maybe what is also going to have an impact on technological developments is you have mentioned international profiles of research groups like mine. I think what we see happening, what is a very unfortunate development, is on the political side, is that globalization is on retreat, I would say. Continents are trying to become autonomous, also in terms of technology. Take the European Chips Act. And collaboration and open exchange of science is on its retreat. And I think us scientists have to fight for globalization in science. And that is a big challenge, which I see is going to become even more important over the coming years.
If globalization is changing, and I think it is, and it may have very well arrived at a new phase of globalization, then the scientists that you talked about have to stand up for their work and also for their international collaboration. At the same time, what can each and every one of us perhaps do from the perspective of your field of work, of your research, to protect our planet?
Well, protecting the planet means, I guess, sustainability. It means energy savings wherever they are possible. It also means the introduction of technology that is available to save energy. And it is very often not a technological challenge, but a political challenge. From my own perspective, what we are doing to address this issue is we have understood that we have for a long time completely neglected the fact that all new technology and all this technological development is also power hungry. It requires power. And we have all too often neglected the power aspect of what we are doing. So if we try to increase data rates in wireless systems, if we try to reduce the size and the cost of power electronics, and if we try to push for more e-mobility, we must always also consider how much energy is required in these new technological developments. And it is something which I, together with my scientists, have understood, and we address this by trying to also reduce the amount of energy consumption in all those new technologies we develop, and we essentially improve efficiencies in whatever we do.
Thank you for having opened up yet another dimension that relates to the use of energy now and in the future. I would like to end our conversation with our classic, and that's those seven questions. We call it Moment 7 that we have for you. Moment 1. Spätzle or Maultaschen?
Maultaschen, for sure.
Moment 2. One thing you could change about the world would be?
More coolness in the interaction of humans.
Moment 3. Do you have a recommendation for a book or another media that you could share with us?
Yeah, why not recommend a book? I mean, it's something completely out of date, I guess. But I would recommend everybody to read The History of Western Philosophy by Bertrand Russell.
Moment 4. The best advice you have ever received was?
To be tolerant.
Moment 5. Your favorite place at the University of Stuttgart is?
Cool question. What comes to my mind, it's a place where I never go again now because I don't have the time. There is a rehearsal room for bands next to the library downstairs.
Moment six. If I could start all over again, I would do the following differently.
All over, from which age?
I think whenever you want to put it, but let's say teenager.
Teenager. I would do many things probably the similar way. I guess I wouldn't end up in engineering science. If I had my way now, I probably would have gone in a maybe even medical direction.
And moment seven. Please complete also this sentence. Thanks to my studies, which we know now you would have done somewhere else perhaps, or in another field rather. So again, thanks to my studies, I know that...
In any profession, even if you are an electrical engineer, it comes down to human interaction and working with humans, among humans.
Ingmar, thank you for our power conversation about power. Good visions, I think, that we heard today. And we should reflect about those as well. Wishing you all the very best for your future work in your many responsibilities, but also your PhD students, everybody in the various organizations that you are involved in as well, and certainly here at the University of Stuttgart.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to be here. And it's thanks to the young people like our students and my PhD researchers that I am positive about the future of our planet.
And to our audience, please stay tuned for our upcoming conversations that are always based on what is made in science.